Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah.
This is Rajesh Sam Ebenezer Kadambavnam David. From Towson, Maryland, Pam Shriver country, I'm delighted to introduce the Mellifluous Insights of the Tennis Podcast.
Thanks very much, Rajesh. Pam Shriver country, Catherine, I wouldn't mind going there if Pam's going to be there.
Yes, we had to clarify just before coming on air that it's not called Pam Shriver country. Although perhaps yeah, it should be.
That's what it is to us. Anyway, Rajesh, thank you ever so much for your kind words and your support of our Kickstarter at the end of last year, which enables us to produce a gazillion podcasts all year long, which is what we're doing right now. You're talking, Catherine, hello, and Matt. You're talking to somebody who is partially vaccinated.
Oh, right, and, we're going there, are we?
Yeah, we're going there.
Okay.
And so far, so good. I had it about an hour ago, and I can just about string a sentence together, so I think it's going all right.
I believe sort of 5 hours is the sort of crucial time post AstraZeneca vaccine. Yeah, it's a bit like being stung by an Irukandji jellyfish, right, where there's like an incubation period before you know whether it's going to be bad. And the first symptom is an intense sense of dread.
Have you got anything better to tell me about, Matt? I mean, any better news about it?
I mean, you'll almost certainly be fine. As the man at the boat sales place said when he was holding up the wetsuits for hire, trying to entice us to hire them, this will reduce your risk of being stung by 70%. But if you do get stung, you'll probably die. I mean, in that case, mate, 70%, not enough. What's the take up on those?
Okay. Ah, right. Matt, any better news? Or
I was trying to work out where that leaves us as a podcast. About 16.7% vaccinated.
Oh, yeah.
We all need two.
Yeah. That's the oldest, good, by the way, everybody, as you may have guessed. But I know I couldn't be happier to have the chance to have
Yes, I have a friend whose age I don't know. She's of indeterminate age, despite having been friends with her for a decade. And I'm hoping that discovering when she gets her vaccine will be how I unearth her age, or at least her age bracket.
But presumably you know her age bracket already.
I know it down to 10 years, but I don't know which side of 40.
Why don't you just ask the woman?
I have.
Oh, okay. Well, while I was waiting in the car for the 15 minutes that you have to wait, I was watching Dan Evans against Novak Djokovic on my phone and listening to all of the chat from Matt on our WhatsApp group, which was going unanswered because I was getting vaccinated at the time. And blimmin' heck, we've got a bit of a story on our hands, folks, because in Monte Carlo today, Dan Evans, Dirt Ball Dan, has defeated Novak Djokovic.
You just come up with that.
Oh, yeah.
A few hours ago.
That's going in the headline for this podcast.
Okay.
Everybody will already know that. But tell me about it, folks, because I saw the first three games when he was double break up. But what percentage, if you can put it in those terms, was this about him? And what percentage of it was about Novak Djokovic hitting, I think, 40-odd errors in the match?
Well, for those first three games that you watched, it was very much about Djokovic hitting probably about 20 of those 40 errors. I mean, Djokovic was awful to start with, could barely find the court, and looked flat, and Dan Evans just looked so pumped, and he referenced that in his interview with Prime afterwards. He said Djokovic had kept him waiting backstage before coming on court, and that had really fired him up, as if he needed any extra firing for a match like that, because he did look pumped throughout, didn't he? He looked like he did in his doubles matches in Miami. He'd carried that onto the singles court on clay. But then after that, I would say, look, Djokovic wasn't his best, and he definitely was flat and irritated. I think the conditions were quite a factor in that, and it got windier as the match progressed, and we know that Djokovic doesn't enjoy that. But I think he was waiting for him to go away. When will this guy just go away? You know, I keep having chances on his serve. I keep sort of eliciting, because it wasn't a perfect performance from Dan Evans either. There was the odd, you know, window of opportunity that opened up where he hit, you know, a pretty horrid error that would have kind of mentally sent a lesser player off the boil, I think. They'd have thought, well, that was my one chance against the world number one. I'm not going to get one of those again. But he swatted those disappointments away and just created other chances. And he was under constant pressure on his serve, constant pressure. He had Djokovic had chances to break him at Evans serving 3-4 and 4-5 in the second set, didn't take them. So, look, it definitely wasn't peak Djokovic, but Evans didn't really give him a chance to be, I don't think. Taking aside the first 3 to 4 games of the first set, that is. What's your take, Matt?
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate assessment. That's what I saw as well. I've read some quotes from Djokovic saying that Evans is a nice player to watch, but not a nice player to play against. This was their first ever meeting. He said that Evans dismantled my game. Ooh. That is quite a quote from Djokovic, who I think was very quickly into his press conference after the match. These were sort of gut reactions from him, but that's clearly how he felt. And Evans did a fantastic job of frustrating Novak Djokovic with slice, manoeuvring the ball around the court, drop shots, bringing him into the net. If you wanted a match to highlight the tennis brain that Dan Evans has got, this was it. He really threw Djokovic off his rhythm. And it was all the more surprising to me because I'd watched Djokovic play Jannik Sinner yesterday and look pretty good for a first match on clay, a first match since the Australian Open. And he was locked in right from the start against Sinner, as though he was completely aware of the threat that was down the other end of the court. And he was a little bit less focused today against Dan Evans, whereas Evans wasn't. He was right up for it from the start, as we know, given those quotes that he gave. And I think that fast start slightly shocked Djokovic a little bit. But even then, there were so many moments where I felt, OK, this is the moment where Djokovic is going to click into gear, take control. And Evans was feisty enough to hang in there and never let Djokovic really take control of the match. It was certainly an excellent performance from Evans, causing Djokovic to be well off his game, as well as Djokovic having a bit of a bad day, I think.
I feel like the manner of Dan Evans breaking the Djokovic serve for 6-5 in the second set, which left Evans serving for the match, I feel like that encapsulates the match as a whole. So Djokovic is, I think Evans has had preceding break points. I think he might have had 15-40.
Well, it was 4-4 in the second set, 15-30.
Right.
And Evans had an absolute sitter on top of the net, a backhand, yeah, with the whole court free, and he dunked it right in the net. So he never quite got to break point in that 4-4 game. But I mean, I would have never, ever recovered if I'd hit that shot. I would have just lost every game remaining in the match.
Yeah.
So for Dan Evans to compose himself and regroup after missing that was really incredible mental strength, I thought.
And that's the perfect example, isn't it? So many other players would have gone, well, it's the world number one. That was my chance. I missed it. You don't get other chances. And that's the sort of thing commentators say in that moment. You know, you've got to take your chances against the best players. And you just can't afford to make loose errors like that against them. But he just went, no, I'll just make another chance, thanks. But the way he actually broke was by eliciting a double fault from Djokovic. So Djokovic, I think, netted on his first serve, missed the first serve anyway. And then this huge gust of wind got up and Djokovic aborted his service motion and took a moment. Dan Evans did a few paces backwards. It was a sort of a reset type thing. So the whole service rhythm has been disrupted, and then you could sort of see this glimmer in Evans' eye. He went, oh, hang on. You know, he's already off the boil here. He's already somewhere in the back of his mind going, oh, God, don't double fault. And the wind's a factor. And I think the commentator on Prime at that moment said, well, at this stage, you've just got to find the court. Break point down, you know, 20, 30 seconds in between first and second serves. And then Dan Evans crept in to, you know, within centimetres of the service line, and he got that double fault from Novak Djokovic. It was sensational mind gamery. It was great.
Mm. Djokovic did actually reference the Sinner match and the difference between the two and how different he felt and the conditions being very, very windy, etc. But he also made sure everybody knew it was just an awful performance from me and I can take no positives away from it. I would love to see them play each other again in the next month, whether it's in Madrid or in Rome or at Roland Garros, because I know what Evans is like, a little bit like Murray is like. When somebody winds them up a bit, they play better. But I think Djokovic is the same. And I think he won't forget this. And he will... Because, I mean, yes, I think Evans's game discombobulated him a bit and he has to try to work it out. And I also think because he just kept diffusing him with the backhand slice, he just refused to let him get the upper hand because he just kept on getting the damn thing back. It must be so irritating when you're just trying to assert yourself. Next time, I mean, I've seen a few of these. Remember when Dimitrov beat Djokovic in Madrid a few years ago and then they played again and you kind of take that into the next one and you think this might be a thing now. We've had it with Hewitt playing Nadal and pushing him, I think, in Hamburg one year, and then they played at Roland Garros a couple of weeks later and he could barely get games. And I think that, yeah, Djokovic will probably underline his status the next time they play and go out with a bit of extra about him. Because I think it must be quite... we've talked about this before. It becomes increasingly difficult for these all-time greats to get up for these events in the same way they do for the major tournaments.
Realistically, he probably, Djokovic, wouldn't be playing this tournament were it not in his back garden. Pretty much, it's not the size of event; it's the location, I think, which is prompting him to play this. Yeah. So,
and it's there's rustiness and all the rest of it about him. And I know that probably sounds like I'm not giving Evans credit, and I don't intend that to be the case because I think he was fantastic. Really, I mean, And it's been the same all week long. The first round match he had, which he required several match points in order to win, and then he beat Hurkacz in the second round, who I don't think was very good, was he? But again, Evans has been excellent and deserves his place in the quarterfinals. I think we know there's an element of where we are in the season about the result.
Yeah, and I think that is especially true about Djokovic. I mean, he told us after winning the Australian Open that he's shifted his priorities even more than he already had towards the Grand Slams. And I think first tournament back after the Australian Open, first tournament back on the clay is probably going to be about as vulnerable as he gets. Still, I think he was capable of playing a lot better than he did today, judging by what we saw against Sinner. And yes, Djokovic's bad performance is ultimately probably the main reason for this loss to Evans. But as we've said, Evans did so many good things on the court today. And the achievement for Evans, who coming into this tournament had won 2 ATP matches on clay in his whole career. Both of those were 4 years ago in Barcelona. He'd also won 2 in Davis Cup. But one of those was against Matej Pavic, I was looking.
In singles.
So, in singles, yeah. So that is basically a guy with so little experience of winning matches on clay at this level. He was also having real trouble closing out matches generally, taken so many close defeats building up to this tournament against Karatsev, against Federer, against Musetti, against Tiafoe. It felt to me like he'd kind of forgotten how to win. And then he beats Lajovic in the first round, as you said, with a really, really tight match where he needed multiple match points. He dropped the second set, won it in the third. Then he beat the most recent Masters 1000 champion, Hubert Hurkacz, in the second round. And now he's beaten Novak Djokovic, the world number one, in straight sets. That is such a leap he's taken to reach his first Masters 1000 quarterfinal in such a short space of time on the surface that has been his weakest throughout his whole career. For all of those things to come together is really remarkable and very much deserved, I think.
Catherine, the similarities with Evans and Henman circa 2002 to 2004 on clay, when he just seemed to crack clay in his own way, were uncanny, really, weren't they? And I mean, I think I always feel like you remember that period maybe more than any of us, even though I was covering 2002 Monte Carlo when he reached the semis, and I watched a fair bit of 04. But I mean, it always clashed with Queens and all the rest of it, the quarterfinals, semifinals, etc. But it's quite something, really, isn't it, to watch these guys do that?
Yeah, because those were the years where the clay court season clashed with my study leave, David. So, vivid memory of every single match. Yeah, 2002 was GCSEs. So then we had AS levels and then A levels. So, yeah, if there is any match from that period that you would like a detailed David Law, Pete Sampras match type regaling about, then I'm your woman.
How old were you, Matt, at the time?
6 to 8.
Well, at least he was with us.
Sorry, that's so funny.
Yes, so I actually have just been on YouTube watching some highlights of Tim Henman matches during that period on clay to try and get straight in my head exactly how clear the similarities are. And, you know, it's not 100% like for like. The forehand was a bigger weapon for Tim Henman than it is for Dan Evans. But I'd say the when he does choose to hit throw it, the backhand for Dan Evans has really flourished as a weapon on clay this week in a way that I think Henman was hitting over it even less than Dan Evans. But the similarities are more that he wasn't 100. He didn't say, "Oh God, I'm never going to win a point from the back of the court, so I'll just serve, volley, chip, and charge every chance I get." But equally, he had dispelled the whole, "Well, it's clay, you can't serve and volley" thing. It was a really lovely balance of having a bit of belief from the back of the court, not just bailing on any rally, going on more than 3 shots from the back of the court, and thinking, "Well, I'm Tim Henman, this can't possibly work." But equally, just this willingness to come to the net where appropriate, just dispelling all of the tropes and myths about clay court tennis, really. And it's so brilliantly watchable, that kind of tennis on clay. And in that respect, the comparisons are absolutely there. That was a joy to watch at the time. That Tim Henman run to the French Open semifinals and almost the final is one of my favourite tennis watching memories, seeing someone crack clay. And I have to say, I didn't think Dan Evans had it. I mean, look, he's not in a French Open semi-final yet. I know we shouldn't get carried away, but I didn't think he had this in him at all. I interviewed him at Roland Garros. It was probably coming into the clay after when he'd had the run at the Australian Open where he'd beaten Chile. That was 2017, wasn't it? And I was looking for positives to ask him about. on the eve of the French Open, you know, yes, I know clay is not your favourite surface, but what a year you're having. Do you believe you can carry that onto the clay and put a run together here? And he just pretty much said no. It was a really awkward interview. He said, no, I can't do clay. I'm Dan Evans. And obviously that was funny at the time, but also a little bit depressing. And it's such a turnaround from that, isn't it? Such a turnaround. It's great to see.
I remember we were watching just a few weeks ago him play Lorenzo Musetti in his first match on clay this year in Italy. And he was getting taken apart in the first set. I think he lost it 6-1. And he was trying to rally from the back of the court with Musetti. And there was a moment at the start of the second set where he screamed in the direction of his box, play your own game. And it was like he just had a sudden realization that this isn't working. I'm never going to be able to beat these guys purely playing from the back of the court. He was looking like fish out of water, really uncomfortable. And then he turned that match around. He didn't win it, but he pushed it. He pushed Musetti, took it to a final set tiebreak. And he's carried that on in Monte Carlo this week. It's something has clicked for him in terms of having the confidence to play his own way and see how far it takes him. And it's working.
Mm. He did that hilarious return position, didn't he? Where he was, I mean, it's so cheeky, just standing virtually, you know, maybe about 2 feet behind the service line, way inside the baseline.
It got him a break of serve against the world number one today.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely has something to it. It's clever.
Been doing,
use what you got.
The Gabriella Sabatini episodes of Tennis Relived. That's what he's been doing.
That's what it is. he faces David Goffin next. So we got 5'9" Evans against 5'11". Apparently, of David Goffin.
It's not accurate.
That's what it says on the ATP website. But anyway, cracking win for David Goffin, who I'm quite pleased for. I mean, he beat Alexander Zverev today, I think 6-4, 7-6. And Zverev, I think, kind of disgraced himself a bit the way he flung his racket away at the end of the match in the direction, it seemed to me, of his own support team who were sitting out to his left, and he just flung it sort of at a right angle across the court in their direction.
Was he wearing for that match?
Oh, is there some sort
was
of
it the
long
same thing he was wearing
number?
Yesterday? Very, as I said on the WhatsApp yesterday, very Josh Hartnett circa 2002,
I didn't get that reference.
Nobody did. That's why I'm repeating it. I'm hoping it gets a more receptive audience this time.
Yeah, all right.
You know, the era where young boys wore a T-shirt over a long-sleeved shirt and...
Oh, right.
And, you know...
Yeah, my son
it
does
was,
that.
It was
yeah.
the coolest, hottest thing a young boy could do, you know, yeah. 20
my,
years
my
ago.
My son isn't aware that was cool 20 years ago. He just sees footballers do it. So he's doing it. But anyway, now Zverev's doing it. And he's lost in straight sets. So David Goffin, though, who's had a... I don't know, I just feel a bit sorry for Goffin. Because he's talked about how miserable he's found bubble life, hasn't he? And a bit of a struggle. And he suddenly seems to have got his form going again. But that could be quite a spectacle of a match, couldn't it, Matt, on clay, those two?
Absolutely, yeah, that is right up my street, that kind of match. Lots of variety, lots of interesting rallies, I should think. I was keeping one eye on that. I was mainly watching Evans Djokovic this morning, but from what I saw, it really looked like David Goffin was the better player. He was the one trying to dictate the points with his forehand, you know, that little quick footwork he's got to get round his backhand and hit the forehand. I love watching that. And he needed a lot of match points. It was getting a bit sticky for him in that tiebreak, but yeah, that's an impressive win. He didn't lose serve in the whole match against Zverev on clay, so I would suggest some more sneaky return tactics from Evans might be needed against Goffin to draw out some breaks of serve, because it sounds like he's playing really well, Goffin.
Expect backhands down the line in that one. Lovely, lovely backhands down the line.
Yes, absolutely. Stefanos Tsitsipas also through to the quarterfinals. He will face Alejandro Davidovich Fokina, who has had a bit of a breakout week, hasn't he? He's beaten Luka Puy today, and he's starting to get somewhere. He's an interesting chap to watch because, I mean, he's not your standard Spanish clay courter, is he?
I mean, he does prefer the clay. I think he's actually a junior Wimbledon champion, but he is most at home on clay, I believe. And he's very fun to watch. Drama is never far away when you're watching him. I always get the sense that he might be about to implode.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm watching that tomorrow.
Yeah, he's really good fun. I do think he'll have his work cut out against Tsitsipas. The more I see Tsitsipas on clay, the more that just makes a lot of sense to me. It seems to really accentuate the strengths in his game and nullify some of the weaknesses. The fact he's got so much more time on the ball, that return of serve we've talked about being a weakness is just not on the clay. And he was very good against Christian Garin today.
Hello, what is this new pronunciation? Do we need to know about it?
Well, I've discovered that there's an accent on the I, which would mean that's where the emphasis is.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going with you, Matt. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, because, like, it's accurate. Christian Garin, who had beaten Tsitsipas brothers in doubles apparently the day before, so Tsitsipas has got his revenge.
Did you watch the win for the Tsitsipas brothers in doubles though, the previous
I saw the hug, which was prolonged.
Well, that probably took up half your day.
Yeah,
watching the hug
that happened. And I also saw a rant from Stefanos in the direction of the umpire, which I didn't enjoy. He had a right go. I mean, you know, we like aggro here, but that wasn't...
It was Arno Gabas.
Hang on. I think I have seen this. Yes, I saw it as part of an Arno Gabas montage, a sort of always me montage. There is definitely an increasing trend of the variety of umpire abuse along the lines of, who do you think you are? You've never played the game. You don't understand the game. You've got no right to be here. And that worries me. Yeah.
Because he told him to go back to futures where you belong, I think. First of all, is quite a take when he's playing with his brother, who's ranked, 900 and something in the world. Second of all, there's just a lot nicer ways to get across your displeasure about a line call. It was out of order, really. Sorry.
I think that was quite the takedown, Matt. I think one of the things with Stefanos is because he's a bit different generally. I mean, and I love him for it in so many ways. And there's an awkwardness to his behaviour at times. It's not quite what you expect, and sometimes he doesn't get the gag, or he tells a gag that doesn't work, and equally, his rant like that felt over the top. It felt too much for the situation, you know, and it felt, unpleasant. Didn't really enjoy watching that, and usually we love a rant. Anyway, they're out of the doubles. As is Felix Auger-Aliassime out of the singles. That hasn't started too well with Uncle Tony. Played one, lost one. Straight sets defeat. I tend to say this sort of stuff when a new coach gets together and a new player, they lose a match, and I'm like, this isn't working then, is it? which is horrendously unfair. But, it's not an auspicious start, is it? Who did he lose to? I don't even know.
Matt watched this one as part of a multi-screen event.
Yeah, he lost to our man Christian Garin again. Who is a very good clay courter. And I think the result is not necessarily a bad one. I think you can lose to him on clay. He's got, five titles on the surface, I think. The manner of the defeat was slightly alarming. Felix was well in control of the match. It was then delayed. They had to go off for rain. I think it was on Monday. They came back on Tuesday and Felix just didn't have it. He was making loads and loads of unforced errors. It was a similar consequence to what has happened to him in the finals that he's played, where suddenly his game just goes completely off and he starts racking up so many unforced errors, and he doesn't seem to have a way to stop it from just sort of running away from him. He didn't look as inhibited as he looked in those finals by nerves or pressure or whatever. It was just a really bad performance. But I think, I do think we have to give those coaching partnerships some time. I was thinking perhaps this is just Tony Nadal's ploy or ruse to just be with Rafa Nadal again, because he was then watching Nadal's matches from the balcony. It's like, Felix is out in round one. I'll just hang on and
while
watch
I'm here.
Rafael until he wins the tournament while I'm here. Exactly.
Well, he's doing all right, his old Nadal. He lost two games today against poor old Grigor Dimitrov, 6-1, 6-1. And he's wearing a loud outfit, is Nadal. He's wearing all purple with pink shoes, I think. Or no, purple shoes and pink something else. There's pink trim in the outfit.
We're definitely back to the 80s on the shorts front, aren't we?
Yes. Mm. Short.
Mm. Very, very short.
Billie Jean the dog has just appeared on Catherine's shoulder, which is a bit of a turn-up. Hello, Billie Jean. Do you want to get on the show or something? But anyway, Nadal's lost so far in two matches. He's lost five games. So,
did you hear the quotes he gave about Dimitrov after the match?
Oh, no.
No.
It was a terrible performance from Dimitrov. He revealed he's been struggling with toothache and has really not been sleeping at all and just is not in any fit shape to be playing Nadal at the moment. And he was... I mean, every time I looked up at that match, he was basically missing a forehand, Dimitrov. And Nadal said after the match, he played a very bad match. That's the true no. The score is his fault.
Oh.
Coming from
brutal.
Nadal is really both sort of accurate and brutal.
Crikey.
I mean, he didn't mean it. But,
So Nadal now gets either Rublev or Bautista Agut, which is next, which is currently going on, actually. I would quite like to see Nadal-Rublev. I'd like to see if Rublev can make any...
would.
I want to see if he could. I reckon he'd love to have a go, you know.
You think he'd have a go?
Forehand about, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's see how many games is one
Rublev
on Monday
is wearing.
We
I mean, it's probably the same size as the kit that Nadal's wearing, but it's just draping off him. Like a sort of scarf, so, like a kaftan, whereas
different
Nadal's
build.
Is like a sort of lycra bodysuit.
It takes all sorts, doesn't it, tennis? We've got loads going on. Fanini against Krajinovic is later today. Rude against Krajinovic is on at the moment. Oh, did he?
Yeah, Fanini's flying. The defending champion. And possibly even, well... No, I was going to say, even with Djokovic in the draw, Fanini might be the biggest threat to Nadal on clay. Certainly now that Djokovic is out, for sure. I mean, he's beaten Nadal a number of times on clay, including the last time in this tournament. So he's probably the one that you would circle as a threat to Nadal. And I think they could meet in the semis.
Semis, yeah. Mind you, you know, don't forget, my man Casper Ruud, who I keep telling you about, who's going to just rip it up this clay court season, even though he let me down last week in the predictions. And Novak Djokovic has let me down today. So it's going really well.
Your exact words on Ruud, David, were, I love Ruud on clay, might pick him every week of the clay season. If he stays fit, he's going to hurt people big time this year.
Yes.
So after a week of failure, you reverted to picking the world number one. Such is your massive faith in Casper Ruud.
I do regret that a bit now. Now that Djokovic is out. Anyway.
Ruud beat Schwartzman.
Yes. Well, there you go. See? Told you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So let's have a look at what's going on in Charleston at the moment. Somebody's picked Shelby Rogers to win the title amongst us. Who was it?
That was me. Yeah.
All right. And she's in the quarterfinals, which is a bit annoying.
So's Clara Towson.
No offence, Shelby.
So's Clara Towson, oh, yeah. David.
Yeah,
I picked
she
her.
Thrashed Isla Tomljanovic overnight. I saw a couple of points out of that. Crikey, what's she got against tennis balls?
Could it be a Towson-Rogers final? Is that possible? Could we go head-to-head come Sunday?
Well, I can exclusively reveal that they are in opposite halves of the draw.
How evident was it, though, that none of us had the draw open in front of us? Do you think we got away with it?
When Elise Cornet said, just between us, this is what I think, and she said that on national TV.
Yes. While she was slamming the French sports minister.
Superb. Yeah, so Towson is in the bottom half of the draw, and Shelby Rogers in the top half. Yeah, so it's Charleston number two is being played at the moment. We also have the Bogota champion going strong. Remember, we talked about on Monday, Maria Camila Osorio Serrano. She beat the second seed Magda Linette in the first round in Charleston. So she continues to impress. Could play Towson next. Ooh. That'd be good, wouldn't it? And we've had a 15-year-old win a match in Charleston. In fact, she's beaten Cornet, who retired with a leg injury at 4-all in the third set. 15-year-old Linda Fruvatova.
Oh, it's not often you meet a Linda under 40, is it?
No.
A 15-year-old Linda?
Yes, correct.
Linda's making a comeback. It'll be Janet next.
Linda. Right, let's have a look where Linda's from. She is from the Czech Republic, yes. And she's playing Emma Navarro of the United States.
Who's also a teenager.
They're everywhere.
Moves very well, does Fruvatova. I watched a rally from this match with Cornet on Twitter, and they were all over the shop.
Coco Gauff is going to be sort of yesterday's woman soon, isn't she?
Yeah, she's going to be a veteran soon, isn't she?
And Chris Evert speaks highly of Linda Fruvatova. She said she practiced at my academy for a few weeks in January and was very impressive. Playing sets with WTA pros and competing with them, showing confidence and skill. She's got it.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That's a Greg Rosetskiism. She's got what I call it. It's one of my favourites.
imagine if Chris, I mean, I wonder whether Linda's heard of Chris Evert. No, of course she has, because she's, you know, at her academy. But I mean, you know, imagine if a woman who's done what Chris Evert has done said that about you.
She'd better have heard of Chris Evert.
I'm joking.
It's like a really scaled up version of when Andy Murray tweeted about Caroline Garcia that
he referenced
she's going to be world number one.
He referenced that to me the other day, that he felt bad.
Well,
he felt he'd sort of put too much pressure on her. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always brought up. And I mean, look, I kind of feel like on one hand you would just feel like a king or a queen, Chris Evert saying this about you. At the same time, yeah, it's it does ramp it up a bit. If somebody that great thinks that you have got it.
I was reading that even though she's now playing some matches on the WTA tour, she's planning to play the juniors at Roland Garros and Wimbledon this summer, and she said she wants the experience of feeling like she should win and trying to win, which I thought was quite interesting, rather than necessarily trying to play up a level and really compete with some of the best players in the world, you know, try and make it through qualifying, for example. She's decided that she thinks the best thing will be to try and have that pressure on her shoulders and seeing if she can live up to it, which I thought was quite interesting.
That's very interesting.
I would definitely go that route. I would definitely want to play players considerably worse than me and just get loads and loads and loads of wins, you know.
Yes, but then I would have what if I don't win in the back of my mind.
The Billie Jean King Cup is to take place over the next few days. The qualifying rounds. And Britain are playing in the UK at the National Tennis Centre at the LTA. They're playing against Mexico starting tomorrow. And Katie Bolter has been given the second single spot next to Heather Watson in the two matches tomorrow. I think that's on streamed on BBC Sports website. I think it's also live on the LTA's social media channels.
And on TikTok.
Is it?
Streamed on TikTok.
Oh, I don't. I haven't got
with like a musical accompaniment.
Very possibly. I don't know. I'm quite intrigued.
Oh, I will have a look. If somebody tell me how to get it, I will have a go. Svitolina and Kostyuk are in action for Ukraine against Japan. Leila Fernandez is leading the Canadian team against Serbia. And Putintseva and Rybakina are playing for Kazakhstan against Argentina, who are led by Podoroska in Cordoba. Putintseva, that brings back some memories from 2 years ago when it used to be called Fed Cup and they played against Britain.
That was fun, wasn't
it? Great days. Yeah, it's exactly 2 years ago. I was commentating on that. It's a lot of fun. And now the other bit of news that's come out over the last few days has been reported by Simon Briggs, amongst others. A couple of really good, interesting pieces by Simon. One, which is revealing all about the Wimbledon expansion plans. You may remember a few years ago they bought the golf course that is adjacent to the All England Tennis Club with ideas to expand into it, and particularly the goal is to bring the qualifying competition on-site to Wimbledon. At the moment it's played in Roehampton off-site. They want to have it more like the other Grand Slam so it can all be on-site. He's written about the expansion plan and his view of it. Doesn't sound as dramatic and spectacular as maybe some people thought it might do initially when the decision was made and the announcement was made that they were going to buy this golf course. But Simon, I think, Catherine, thinks that is for the better and more in keeping with Wimbledon generally. Is that fair?
The plans look very modest. I'm sure once we see them come to fruition, they will be spectacular. I'm sure they would never admit to it, but I wonder if some inspiration has been drawn from the Simone Mathieu court and that site extension or expansion at Roland Garros, because the plans for the Parkland court, which is the one sort of major structure which is planned to be built in the newly acquired area, it does sound quite similar to the description of Simon Mathieu, sort of very in keeping with the environment, sort of a continuity with the greenery, bringing the outdoors, indoors, that sort of vibe. And of course, the Simon Mathieu has the greenhouse thing going on and is an absolute thing of beauty. I mean, all new tennis stadia should be inspired by the Simone Mathieu court. I love it. I think it sounds... I mean, they don't need loads of big, massive new show courts, do they, at Wimbledon? I think modesty probably is the right direction. And they know how to do these things, Wimbledon, don't they? I do trust that they'll...
Yeah.
They'll get this right. I mean, there is a part of me that is a bit sad about qualifying no longer being at Roehampton. I do love Roehampton qualifying, but I totally understand from Wimbledon's perspective why they want to bring it in-house.
Yeah, feels just about time, I would say, to be making this call. Just to elaborate a little bit on what those plans are, there will be an 8,000-seat additional show court in these grounds, which will effectively be the third biggest court that they have behind Centre Court and court number one. But even that, I mean, that's not that big. And they're trying to stay away from high-rise buildings and all of that sort of thing. But they do intend to add 39, I think it was, additional grass courts, which almost pretty much doubles the number at the All England Club at the moment. So the only thing is, Matt, we've got a good old wait on our hands, because this is 2028 before qualifying is likely to be brought onto the site at Wimbledon. I mean, that feels like a long way away, but I suppose these things do. It's a bit like when the World Cup gets given to a nation and it feels forever away, and then it's upon you.
Yes. When were the London Olympics announced? 2005, wasn't it? So there was a 7-year wait, which felt like forever, and then suddenly it's here. I suppose we'll feel like that about Wimbledon. What really struck me reading Simon's piece about these plans was something that I think I knew but I hadn't properly processed, was just how much bigger it is going to make the site. It will be more than double the size of the biggest Grand Slam complex at the moment.
Wow.
And Church Road is going to close during the tournament so that people can flow, I suppose, from the main part of the Wimbledon grounds as we know it now to this expanded site. I'm sure it will be sensitively and very tastefully done and just give so much more space, just give it room to breathe. I don't think Wimbledon is as cramped as Roland Garros has been, but it can feel pretty busy when you're at Wimbledon, whereas the capacity is only going to increase 8,000 per day, but there's going to be so much more space for those people to be in. I think it's just going to make it a way more pleasant experience to be on the ground. It is going to have a transformative effect, even if what is actually in the expanded site is not perhaps quite as grand as we were expecting. I think Simon pointed out that he was maybe expecting there to be a rival Henman Hill area with another big screen, but it doesn't sound like...
A Rosetsky Hill.
Doesn't sound like that's going to be a thing, but it is still going to have a big impact on that tournament when it arrives.
Okay, well, I think that's just about it for this edition of the Tennis Podcast, unless we have anything else we need to cover. I am going to catch up on some tennis watching over the weekend, provided I'm feeling all right. So far, so good. 2 hours old is my vaccination, and no problems at all so far. We have a mascot for the week, which is George, owned by Ailey, and we have already seen pictures galore of George and put them in our newsletter, which you can sign up to in our show notes if you would like to. We also have our own individual mascots. There is Zeus for Catherine. You want to say hello to Zeus, Catherine?
I do, yeah. I met, not met. I heard of another Alsatian this week called Zeus.
Did you?
Maybe it's a thing. Maybe there's a club.
Not as good as ours.
If there is, I'm in it.
Yeah. Matt has Scousel Mousel. Do you want to say hello?
Always. Hello.
I've got Rogue. All right, Rogue. We're having a bad run with the old predictions, but next week's our week, I think. Billie Jean King is sponsoring Billie Jean the dog, who is just standing there looking at Catherine as if to say, are we going a walk or what? Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer, and we have shout outs, Matt, which and whom are?
Ian Etienne.
Oh.
Ooh.
Ian. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Ian. Very English name and a very French name.
Yeah, I wonder what the origins
are. Lovely.
Lovely.
Doesn't Etienne mean Stephen?
Oh, yes, of course, that makes sense. Etienne always makes me think of Saint-Étienne, which makes me think of 1998 England v Argentina, Michael Owen wonder goal.
There you go, Ian. Thanks very much for your support. Who else we got, Matt?
We have Kirsty Turner.
All right, Kirsty.
Hello, Kirsty. Yeah. Like filling Kirsty. I hope Kirsty's British or else she will not get that reference.
I don't
know. And
get
even
it.
If she is, you might not.
What is it?
Oh, come on. Everyone knows Phil and Kirsty.
No. Who is it?
You never watched Love It or List It? Or Location, Location, Location?
What are they?
Or even, like, her various crafting shows, which I don't watch, to be fair.
No, but I'm going to look them up. Anyway, I prefer our Kirsty. All right, Kirsty, thanks ever so much for your support. Who else we got?
Brona Staunton.
Rona. What a great name, Rona.
No,
is.
Brona.
Oh, bloody hell. Brona. What a great name that is.
Even better, an extra letter.
Oh, it's going well, this, isn't it? Catherine will be presenting next week, folks. That'll be way better.
It's a very, very lovely Irish name, Brona, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
It needs to be said in a sort of lovely Irish lilt.
Which I don't have.
Don't do that. But, yeah.
Brona. No, that's not right.
No.
That's Italian.
That was...
Brona, send us an audio recording of your name so we know how to say it. Or at least I do.
I think it's right. I think it is Brona. I think we're pronouncing Brona. It right. We just, yeah.
Maybe I just say it in my
but
accent.
I hope so
Brona.
Anyway.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, I think it's time to. I think the vaccination's kicking in, folks. So I'm off to go and have something to eat and take my son to football. We'll be back on Monday with another edition of the Tennis Podcast. Do leave us an iTunes review or Apple Podcasts, as apparently they call it these days. And yeah, tell your friends about the Tennis Podcast. And we'll be coming to you every single week, twice a week, and daily at the Slams. And we'll be back Monday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.